You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to yet another Locked On Wolves podcast. You know who it is, Colton, Trey, bringing you Timberwolves content every single day of the week. And we talked about it just a tad before the show here, getting ready, but goodness gracious, was that an emotional roller coaster for the Timberwolves last night?
That was rough. You know, I don't even know what to say. I was really getting excited when Kyrie Irving was ruled out. And, you know, getting Robert Covington, you know, getting him some rest, this probably wasn't the best game to get Robert Covington rest. I'm not really sure about that move. And unless it was an immediate injury at practice, I might have missed that. But this is one of those games where we could have just used a guy like Covington to play like a guy like Hayward. It was just an unfortunate loss that didn't necessarily have to happen, especially with that comeback in the third quarter. It was just a really deflating L.
Well, and I would just like to cover our bases here just to show that we're doing our job, trying to be as professional as possible. We recorded actually pretty early the other day, and so when we were looking at the only for sure guy out was Derrick Rose, and Robert Covington was still up in the air, Teague was still up in the air. Those were official reports weren't out for another, like, what, 3 or 4 hours after we were done recording. So, I mean, those were still up in the air at the time we were talking about the game. But, yeah, you're absolutely right. Having Robert Covington in that game, and I guess we're already getting into, we want to talk about breaking down these games before we look at the mini home stretch we have here. But just looking at this game, that's probably the second biggest thing that stands out to me is that Roko against Gordon Hayward on offense and defense, really, I think would have maybe been enough to tip the scales here, because there was plenty of times in that second half where this was a tight game.
Yeah, not only was it a tight game, there was times where, you know, Karl Anthony Towns was looking like his December self here in January now, and I was getting really excited that Tyus Jones was going to help lead a comeback. He played 40 minutes in this game. You know, even Andrew Wiggins, with all the crap I've given him, and, you know, I feel bad now. But he had such an amazing game, and the best thing for him would be come back against the next couple games at home. But there were just so many good performances from those. There were three good performances from those three guys, and having Roko in there to stop Hayward, who is essentially the only offensive, you know, powerhouse for Boston in this game, that would have been real key.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And that was the first big takeaway, I think, for me, was really good Wiggins night. Really sneaky good Wiggins night. You're looking at his stat line. Not only did he put up 31 points, but he shot really efficiently, 55% from the field, 40% from three, 75% from the free throw line, which is a good mark for him because he's been struggling from the charity stripe this year. Had a few rebounds, a few assists, only one turnover in this game. I mean, you look at the way he played in this game, and he was really comfortable. And I know that this is kind of a worn out take that he plays really well against upper tier opponents in primetime situations. Wednesday night basketball against the Boston Celtics in the TD Garden is obviously one of those spots, but he's been spotty even in those situations this year, and so it was good to see him come out and pull out all the stops, and they definitely need it with how thin the roster was the other night. But that said, it could not have been more disappointing and more fun in that first half, because you got to enjoy when Wiggins is playing like that, but you only had 4 points in that first half from Towns. That was like the ultimate disappointment. We talked about how that was the matchup there, how he should be able to excel against the weak and thin front court of the Boston Celtics, and for him to have kind of a dud in that first half paired with Wiggins and how well he was playing right out the gate was so disappointing.
Yeah, the late start from Karl Anthony Towns that second half, that was definitely a reason that Minnesota went into that, you know, half losing by, I think it was like 17 points. And I mean, Minnesota scored 21 points in three quarters in this, like 21 each one. So 21 first, 21 the second, and 21 in the fourth. The 39 points in the third quarter by Minnesota wasn't quite enough to get the W in this one. But that 21 points in the first quarter and fourth quarter cannot happen. You can make lapses in the second and third quarter, but if you start the game so poorly and end the game so poorly, you're not going to come away with the win. And it's really up to guys like Karl Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins to kind of lead them out of there. And credit to Wiggins, like you said, this is one of his sneakily best games of the season. He was even hitting free throws and getting to the line 12 times. So that was fantastic to see. But, you know, we do need guys like Towns contributing 100% of the game. But it's just Al Horford owns Karl Anthony Towns. He really does. And in that first half, Horford just owned Towns. And Towns, of course, had to try and come back and get easy buckets in the third quarter when Boston was up by so much. But credit to Al Horford. I mean, the guy's doing it at an older age. He only played 24 minutes in this game, but he can ball.
What do you think was the biggest factor that kind of made the difference in that third quarter? I have something in mind there, but what did you see in that third quarter that was really the big difference maker there?
I liked, honestly, it might have been those steals from Tyus Jones, those breakaway transition plays, and then those stretch pop-up threes from Anthony Tolliver, which is something you've been on by, you know, differentiating minutes to Tolliver maybe more. You know, those kind of shots really open up the floor and get the team more exciting and get the flow going in the right direction. So I'd probably say Tyus Jones and Anthony Tolliver, just those pick-and-pop plays. Tyus Jones being all over the court, finding open guys, not giving guys like Wiggins contested shots. So I would really say the change in pace that I saw in transition during turnovers.
Yeah, and I think, too, one of those things was also Wiggins kind of in transition. He didn't really shoot that much from three in the third quarter, but he still took five shots, hit 60% from the field, had 8 points in the third quarter. I thought he paired so nicely with a few of the things Towns was doing, and it was just another one of those games where, man, you look at specific players and you look at the entirety of what the team does, and it's not in a game like this, and it's not fantastic. You already mentioned the slow start and the poor finish, but you look at specific game or specific performances from specific players in these type of games, and Wiggins did such a good job of not playing outside of himself, and you saw when he does that how that complements the game of somebody like Towns, or even you mentioned it, somebody like Tyus Jones. And it looked so good. And just, I know that really in the third quarter, the stats obviously for Towns are the ones that jump off the page. But if you're watching the game and the flow of the game, aesthetically and passing the eye test, how they look was so great because nobody was really trying to play super outside of their game or outside of their talents. And you look at that third quarter, and I know it's a small sample size against a good team, but you look at that third quarter and you think, that's the ceiling for this game right here. That's what you should be playing like. That's the rhythm you should be finding. And it's really frustrating that they can't key into that for more than just a quarter. And I know Boston's a good team, so they're going to throw you off your rhythm. But if you're going to be a good team too, you've got to be able to lock into that more than just one time during a game.
Yeah, 100%. And honestly, like, it really comes down to poor coaching. Like, the third quarter seemed pure – it seemed like pure team chemistry. I completely agree with you there. Going into the fourth quarter and also that second quarter going into half, for some reason they were eerily similar. The way that Minnesota tends to collapse all their guys from the perimeter inside on the defensive end when a ball goes underneath the basket, and then the center or power forward, in this case Al Horford, can dip it out to a three-point shooter like Gordon Hayward, where we saw open perimeter threes from him in the corners. Those cannot happen. Taj Gibson is way too slow off the bounce, and he cannot catch up to guys in the corner that quickly. And same thing goes for Towns at times, even though he had a pretty good game with four he only had one block this game. So he was collapsing down low, and he was leaving guys open in the three-point line. And really, if you look at the Boston's team, Minnesota did all they needed to do with getting guys like Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown out of this game. I mean, they did other things, but holding Jaylen Brown to – or giving him five turnovers, which was really Tyus Jones's work, and then Jaylen Brown having five fouls, that was solid work. And then Jason Tatum seemed useless, 3-for-11 from the field, 0-for-3. The only guy who really stood out besides Gordon Hayward to me was Al Horford and a little bit of Terry Rozier in the first half.
Yeah. So there was definitely some meat on the bones there for the Timberwolves to take advantage of, and they just weren't able to do it. I wanted to take a look quick at some Western Conference stuff before we get to our next topic, which is this little mini homestand. First, let's take a break for some sponsors. One last thing I wanted to touch on before we head to looking forward to these games. I watch way too much basketball. That's already been established. But I was keeping tabs on a bunch of the games last night. And when the Timberwolves drop a game like this against an injury, I know they had their injuries too, but injury-riddled Boston team, and you just come out so flat in the first and fourth quarters, it kind of can get depressing for Timberwolves fans. I know we were talking a few shows ago about how you got to tailor your expectations. You got to not sell on this team just if they don't make the playoffs this year, because they're still only 1 year removed right now from a playoff berth, and you got a lot of the same promising pieces on this roster. But for those who are looking at this game and saying they can't get it together, they can't collect themselves, they can't struggle against adversity, I would just like to point out a couple of things that happened around the Western Conference last night as maybe some reasons to still have hope for that eighth seed. Just because if you're looking at the games that happened last night, Anthony Davis returns from his illness that he had, and they really struggle against the Brooklyn Nets. I know they're on the road, but they really struggle against the Brooklyn Nets. Memphis played really well in that first half against Detroit, but they really struggled to close out that game, and they have cooled off since a hot start. The Sacramento Kings didn't play the other night, but they've cooled off since a hot start. The only team that I'm looking at, honestly, that really concerns me, that could vie for a playoff spot that doesn't have a spot right now, is the Dallas Mavericks, because their big problem has been an inability to win on the road, and they absolutely shellacked the Hornets last night on the road, 122-84. And so if I'm looking at these teams, Memphis has been surprisingly good this year. Sacramento has surprised a lot of people early on in the season. And you know, Utah and New Orleans, with some of the pieces on those teams, you kind of have to worry about them a little bit. But none of those guys really scare me maybe as much as the Dallas Mavericks, which is something I can't believe I'm saying. But I think that the Timberwolves genuinely have a better shot than most of those other rosters. And Dallas is the one that's actually putting more things together than piecing more things apart right now, as far as that group. And so I feel like if you're looking at the bulk of NBA action night to night, I mean, the Timberwolves aren't exactly putting on some breathtaking performances every single night, but the promising thing is neither of these other teams that you kind of expect to vie for that eighth seed that San Antonio has right now.
Yeah, and also, like, well, I guess my question to you would be, because I do agree with you that there's a few teams in from 9 to 14, including the Pelicans and starting with the Kings at 9, that can definitely make the postseason. Specifically, the Dallas Mavericks are really essentially only, like, one trade away from, like, moving Wesley Matthews for, like, a Tim Hardaway or something like that, to that extent, from making the playoffs. But who do you see realistically, in your opinion here, that top 8 to fall out?
I'm still thinking Clippers, just because we talked about this earlier. They don't have that superstar that can pull them. Like, if I'm looking at Portland, I know people doubt Portland, but at the end of the day, I trust Damian Lillard to pull this team up by their bootstraps. They've done it a couple of games now where they're tight. You think of the game against the Kings, the game against the Warriors. He's scoring late in those games and pulling them up either when they're down or keeping the lead for them and winning them those games. You think about the Lakers. I know LeBron James has been injured, but when he comes back, LeBron James is a guy who can propel your roster into the postseason. Even San Antonio, they have DeMar DeRozan. I know that he's taken some shots and he's not been exactly the same guy from last year to this year, but he's still a multi-time all-star, a really talented player. And then you have LaMarcus Aldridge too, another multi-time all-star, another all-NBA player. Those guys can propel you into the postseason. I'm looking at the Clippers, and as much as I love Tobias Harris, Lou Williams, as much as I love some of the young pieces like Shea Gilchrist-Alexander on that team, they still don't have that all-star, multi-time all-star talent that in March, in the end of February, can pick up their team when they're dogging by a couple of games and push them into the postseason.
Yeah, and I agree with you. It is the Clippers, and I think by far it's the Clippers. Another team that jumps out, I mean, you kind of already brought it up, is San Antonio. They're one injury away from essentially being out of this postseason completely. They've had so many injuries this year at the beginning of the season with their point guard injuries. And DeMar DeRozan is trying his best to lead this team. I'm very interested to see him play Toronto tonight, by the way. That should be a great game. But yeah, Los Angeles, the Clippers, that definitely is the team that could see being knocked out. So essentially it's the Timberwolves, the Jazz, the Mavericks, the Grizzlies, and the Kings fighting for that eighth spot and hoping the Clippers jump out.
I will say this for the rest of the season, and I said this going in. I think that DeJounte Murray is, unless like James Harden tears his ACL tomorrow, I think DeJounte Murray is the biggest injury for a team this season, because the San Antonio Spurs need him to do so many things defensively, especially on the perimeter. I think that's honestly one of the more defining injuries of the season, because you're right. if you lose DeMar DeRozan for 2 weeks, San Antonio might play themselves out of this thing because they just have had so many injuries and don't have quite the depth that you thought they might going into the season. But I think a lot of the problems that you see them still having is because they don't have a guy like DeJounte Murray on that roster, and they need him for so many things defensively, especially after they lost not only Kawhi Leonard, but also Danny Green, a guy who helped their perimeter defense a ton. So I like that assessment, and I think that that take is going to age well for me. I hope it ages well for me, but I think that's maybe the most, for any, if you're looking at all the rosters around the NBA, I think that one changed the landscape for the San Antonio Spurs more than any other injury will throughout the rest of this season.
Yeah, I mean, DeJounte definitely is going to hurt them long term, you know, especially this season. But like guys like Patty Mills, like they're gonna step up in his place at times, but not really what San Antonio wants when moving into the postseason. So that hurts a lot. My pick here would be Houston, the Rockets, with you know, Chris Paul. If Chris Paul continues to have that injury with his hamstring, and he is out for more games this season, I can't see James Harden keeping this 40-point streak up. I mean, he's playing amazing MVP basketball right now, and he's probably my vote right now at this moment just because of his insane streak. But I, you know, if Chris Paul gets one more injury, you could even see Houston falling out this.
That's the thing, though, is that if so much of their game is predicated on isolation ball, right? And if James Harden isn't in there, you play isolation ball with Chris Paul. But you can play isolation ball with just James Harden on that team, and he can shoulder the load. As far as defensively for the Spurs, they don't have a guy that can step up anymore and play the role that DeJounte Murray played because they lost so many key defenders in the offseason.
Yeah, it's definitely not going to be Pau Gasol.
Yeah, not on the perimeter, that's for sure. We're going to take another break, and then we're going to look ahead to the upcoming pair of home games. All right, closing out the episode. The Timberwolves are home for the next two games. They have the Magic tomorrow, the Orlando Magic, and then on Sunday, the LA Lakers. What is kind of a theme that you're seeing for the Timberwolves here? Because the thing that jumps out to me right away is that these are two take-care-of-business games, right? I mean, you go on the road and you play the Thunder after this. You're playing the Mavericks at home. You're playing the Pelicans at home. Those are all good teams with all-star level talent on those rosters, and nothing against the Magic and the Lakers, but if LeBron stays out for the game against the Timberwolves, these are two definitely take care of business games that the Timberwolves need to win.
Yeah, the Lakers one honestly scares me a little bit, but I'll start with Orlando. The guy to watch, and I think it's pretty obvious to everyone at this point, is Nikola Vucevic. I mean, we just got to give that guy some money this offseason. Just in general, the NBA needs to just let Vucevic get his big-time dollars. He's been playing so well this season. You could argue he's even been playing better than Karl Anthony Towns, even with this late amazing stretch. So he's definitely got to watch out for. Especially because Nikola Vucevic and Karl Anthony Towns have had so many defensive lapses this year. It could be a huge center game, which I'd love to see. Another guy to watch out for, Aaron Gordon. He's their big money guy right now. And they just have a bunch of wings and centers in Orlando. So they're a long team, a bunch of Wiggins-type guys. So just watch out for that. When it comes to Los Angeles, like, they're a young team without LeBron, just have so much youth on that floor. So hopefully they utilize that on their end. I can just see Minnesota just try to be the veterans there, especially with Towns and Wiggins, just kind of take advantage of – to me, like, Ingram is a poor man's Wiggins at this point too. Like, I have a lot of faith in Ingram and Wiggins in the future, but right now they both play very similar games. So I can see them cancel each other out. I just would like to see Karl-Anthony Towns, you know, give the other young guys in L.A., those cocky guys, some work.
Would you rather have Jonathan Isaac right now or Andrew Wiggins?
And I don't need to think about this at all. And it really just comes to the contract and the defensive game of Jonathan Isaac. I definitely pick Isaac hands down. And I've written about this so much in the past few weeks, and it hurts my soul seeing Wiggins do so well against Boston because I feel terrible about it. But just, this league is just so capped out. That you know, the few years ago when people were signing like guys like Tyler Johnson at $20 million a year dollar deals, or even like, you know, Nick Batum, who Charlotte just reported they're trying to trade immediately. Those guys shouldn't be making $30 million. And it's not that Andrew Wiggins shouldn't be making $35 million at 27 years old in a few years. It's just Minnesota's going to be capped out with him and Towns. So it's just tough. I would much rather have a guy like Isaac just because of the contract.
Yeah, I was thinking about that one going into kind of looking ahead to this game. I was thinking about that a little bit, and it's tough because, honestly, Jonathan's offensive production hasn't been there, and you kind of expected him. I mean, he was drawing the Kevin Durant comparisons, right, when you were looking at him in the draft and when he was at FSU, and it just hasn't been there for him. But if you're looking, you're right, at the defensive stuff, first of all, as far as just standing on their own stats, I've been impressed with the 1.2 blocks per game that he's averaging this year. But then if you're looking at on-off-court stats, the defensive rating for the Magic when he's on the court is pretty solid, and you like to see some of the stuff he's doing, especially when you're able to switch and you can switch him onto a couple different kinds of players just because he's long, but he's also pretty quick. And so I feel like I don't know. I think that he could kind of grow into maybe a Robert Covington type of player. I mean, is that too bold of a prediction, or is that under the ceiling where you see him? But I feel like that's kind of where he can grow into, is being this really athletic, really versatile defender who's making a difference, especially on the perimeter defense, and then on the other side can knock down long shots in transition.
I hope for a guy like Jonathan Isaac to become a Robert Covington type player on both ends. It's just Covington's turned his offensive game into such a spot up shooter that I don't think Isaac has that in the near future. I see Isaac right now as more of an athletic Michael Kidd-Gilchrist from Charlotte. I kind of like him there at that spot or that comp right now in his young career. Ultimately, I'd love to see him as a better version of Robert Covington, which is, you know, a potential all-star one day. He's definitely a solid player, but he just has a lot of lapses in the offensive end. He's a streaky shooter, for one. He can't really get that spot up mid-range around the pick yet, which is a really important shot for guys to hit. But one thing that is nice is he is hitting his free throws lately, which is a good sign for the future from the three-point line too. So I definitely like him a lot. For me with Wiggins, it's just I would take a lot of young rookie contracts that are pretty solid players instead of Andrew Wiggins, and it's just at this point in time, I'm purely looking at it from an analytical perspective. If my heart is in it, I do believe in Andrew Wiggins, and I wish him the best, and I think he will be a very solid player in this league. But I think there's more of a ceiling for guys like Isaac, that you can weigh the option of whether to sign them the max in a few years rather than take the chance on whether Wiggins is going to be an all-star by 27.
I feel like you're a little like me too, where you're you lean towards the upside. You like the upside guys. You like the young upside guys.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if I could have a team of, wings that are like 19 years old, like I'll play five wings just all together, 20 years old guys who make $2 million each. Like I'd much rather have that than guys who are borderline all-stars by all five starters.
We're going to get you to be the GM of the Atlanta Hawks yet. Don't you worry. the last thing I wanted to finish on, the last kind of comparison similarity that I would like to draw on both of these two teams that they're going to play. I think that the youth is going to be a big deal, not only for the opponents, but for the Timberwolves in all three of these games. The young guys are going to be key in these games. I think that we already talked about Jonathan Isaac, but Kuzma, Brandon Ingram, young guys on the Lakers, young wings are going to be important for both of those teams against the Timberwolves and how they play, especially from outside. And then on the other side, the Timberwolves' young guard and Tyus Jones, I think, is going to continue to be a really important storyline throughout the next couple of games, how he's able to attack these two teams. I really would love to see him take advantage of a mismatch, because the Orlando Magic have had a really good guard in, 18 years, 15 years, something like that, whatever it is. But and then against the Lakers, see him match up against guys like Lonzo Ball, see how he plays against other young guys like Lonzo Ball. I think that the youth is going to be a very interesting narrative over the next couple of games.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, ultimately, like, this Lakers team is very, very young. I expect Minnesota to come away with a win against Orlando, not an easy win. But I think they might have some real trouble against Los Angeles, just the youth and speed of this team. The team they're trying to mimic, being the older Lakers, trying to be that fast-paced, flashy passing kind of team. I get nervous with Minnesota with those kind of games, like I brought up before in past pods. They just get down on themselves so quickly. With Orlando, even though Orlando's 3-1 the past four games, they're on a good streak right now. They're trying to fight for Eastern playoffs. I think they're done tanking over there in South Florida, but they're trying their best. I can still see Minnesota pulling away with a win there. They just had such a defeating loss against Boston, and I think Robert Covington's coming back, and Jeff Teague will be probable. So that's a good look for them tomorrow night. But against Los Angeles, they got to just stop guys like Kyle Kuzma, Josh Hart, Brandon Ingram. These are good players. Lonzo Ball on the defensive end will hold up Tyus Jones pretty well, but Tyus Jones is a great defender himself, so that should be a fun matchup to watch. Just don't let stupid things happen, like Kentavious Caldwell-Pope go for 25 points like he did against the Thunder the other night. Like, do not let Kentavious Caldwell-Pope be the defining factor in this game if you're Tom Thibodeau.
Couldn't agree more. I believe that's it for us. We're going to be back tomorrow. We're going to give you a more in-depth look at the Magic and matchups for the Timberwolves, give you a full list of who's going to be playing, who's going to be in on that game. But as far as today, that's all we got. Thank you so much for tuning in and listening to another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.